Demons, Fyodor Dostoevsky. Chapter 6. Pyotr Stepanovich is busy. The date of the fete was definitely fixed, and von Lempke became more and more depressed. He was full of strange and sinister forebodings, and this made Yulia Mihailovna seriously uneasy. Indeed, things were not altogether satisfactory. Our mild governor had left the affairs of the province a little out of gear. At the moment we were threatened with cholera. Serious outbreaks of cattle plague had appeared in several places. Fires were prevalent that summer in towns and villages, whilst among the peasantry foolish rumours of incendiarism grew stronger and stronger. Cases of robbery were twice as numerous as usual. But all this, of course, would have been perfectly ordinary had there been no other and more weighty reasons to disturb the equanimity of Andrei Antonovitch, who had, till then, been in good spirits. What struck Yulia Mihailovna most of all was that he became more silent and, strange to say, more secretive every day. Yet it was hard to imagine what he had to hide. It is true that he rarely opposed her, and as a rule followed her lead without question. At her instigation, for instance, two or three regulations of a risky and hardly legal character were introduced with the object of strengthening the authority of the governor. There were several ominous instances of transgressions being condoned with the same end in view. Persons who deserved to be sent to prison and Siberia were, solely because she insisted, recommended for promotion. Certain complaints and inquiries were deliberately and systematically ignored. All this came out later on. Not only did Lempke sign everything, but he did not even go into the question of the share taken by his wife in the execution of his duties. On the other hand, he began at times to be restive about the most trifling matters, to the surprise of Yulia Mihailovna. No doubt he felt the need to make up for the days of suppression by brief moments of mutiny. Unluckily, Yulia Mihailovna was unable, for all her insight, to understand this honourable punctiliousness in an honourable character. Alas, she had no thought to spare for that. And that was the source of many misunderstandings. There are some things of which it is not suitable for me to write, and indeed I am not in a position to do so. It is not my business to discuss the blunders of administration either, and I prefer to leave out this administrative aspect of the subject altogether. In the chronicle I have begun, I've set before myself a different task. Moreover, a great deal will be brought to light by the commission of inquiry which has just been appointed for our province. It's only a matter of waiting a little. Certain explanations, however, cannot be omitted. But to return to Yulia Mihailovna. The poor lady, I feel very sorry for her, might have attained all that attracted and allured her, renown and so on, without any such violent and eccentric actions as she resolved upon at the very first step. But either from an exaggerated passion for the romantic, or from the frequently blighted hopes of her youth, she felt suddenly at the change of her fortunes that she had become one of the specially elect, almost God's anointed, over whom there gleamed a burning tongue of fire. And this tongue of flame was the root of the mischief. For, after all, it is not like a chignon which will fit any woman's head. But there is nothing of which it is more difficult to convince a woman than of this. On the contrary, anyone who cares to encourage the delusion in her will always be sure to meet with success, and people vied with one another in encouraging the delusion of Yulia Mihailovna. The poor woman became at once the sport of conflicting influences, while fully persuaded of her own originality. Many clever people feathered their nests and took advantage of her simplicity during the brief period of her rule in the province, and what a jumble there was under this assumption of independence. She was fascinated at the same time by the aristocratic element and the system of big-landed properties and the increase of the governor's power, and the democratic element, and the new reforms and discipline, and free thinking and stray socialistic notions, and the correct tone of the aristocratic salon, and the free and easy, almost pothouse manners of the young people that surrounded her. She dreamed of giving happiness and reconciling the irreconcilable, or rather of uniting all and everything in the adoration of her own person. She had favourites, too. She was particularly fond of Pyotr Stepanovich, who had recourse at times to the grossest flattery in dealing with her. But she was attracted by him for another reason, an amazing one, and most characteristic of the poor lady. She was always hoping that he would reveal to her a regular conspiracy against the government. Difficult as it is to imagine such a thing, it really was the case. She fancied for some reason that there must be a nihilist plot concealed in the province. By his silence at one time and his hints at another, Pyotr Stepanovich did much to strengthen this strange idea in her. She imagined that he was in communication with every revolutionary element in Russia, but at the same time passionately devoted to her. To discover the plot, to receive the gratitude of the government, to enter on a brilliant career, to influence the young by kindness and to restrain them from extremes, all these dreams existed side by side in her fantastic brain. She had saved Pyotr Stepanovich. She had conquered him. Of this she was, for some reason, firmly convinced. She would save others. None of them should perish. She should save them all. She would pick them out. She would send in the right report of them. She would act in the interests of the loftiest justice, and perhaps posterity and Russian liberalism would bless her name. Yet the conspiracy would be discovered. Every advantage at once. Still, it was essential that Andrei Antonovich should be in rather better spirits before the festival. He must be cheered up and reassured. For this purpose, she sent Pyotr Stepanovich to him in the hope that he would relieve his depression by some means of consolation best known to himself, perhaps by giving him some information, so to speak, first hand. She put implicit faith in his dexterity. It was some time since Pyotr Stepanovich had been in Mr. von Lempke's study. He popped in on him just when the sufferer was in a most stubborn mood.